it's the Tully Ringy Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Ringy Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm here to give you my insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. Visit our show's website at TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts and previous shows. Tonight's show is all about estate planning. Here with us is attorney Michael Tominey, a partner in my law firm, Tully Ringy PLLC. Mike will share over 37 years of estate planning experience with us tonight and provide insight into the basic four documents he thinks everybody should have, ways to cut down on taxes on your estate when you die, the steps to take after a loved one passes to ensure that their will is taken care of, and the other options available to you as you take care of your estate. As always, we're joined by Valerie Brizzetti, who is a print media star today. If anybody got the Times Union, you could see on page E1 of the business section, there's a nice photo there of Sergeant Valerie Brizzetti of the Schenectady Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, one of our advertisers. In addition, if you go to the TimesUnion.com web page right now, you'll see her photo above the Capital Region icon. In addition to celebrity Valerie Brizzetti, we have Chris, College Chris. And if you have any questions for the Tully Ringy attorney, Mike Tominey, throughout the show, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or press star WGY on your cell phones. Now, if you guys are like me, and this morning I actually tried to call into one of the shows, and I have a BlackBerry, and I didn't know what WGY was on my BlackBerry. So it's actually star 949 for you people that that don't have the WGY on their cell phones. So tonight we have Mike Tominey. Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Matt, I've been a resident of the Capital District my entire life. I went to Vincentian Institute in Albany. I graduated in 1963. That school is no longer open, of course, but that's where I went to high school. I went from high school to Siena College, where I received a BA in sociology in 1967, and I graduated from Albany Law School in 1970. After I graduated from law school, I worked with what was a relatively small firm in the Capital District area for in excess of 35 years. And about a year and a half ago, I joined Tully Ringy, and I've been very happy that I have. And it's probably the most progressive, quickest growing, and amazing law firms in the Capital District, in my opinion.
Mike, you're great. I love it when you pump up the law firm.
Truth is truth, man.
Mike, you know, this is one of the topics that I've been looking forward to for a long time, and here's the reason why. A lot of the listeners may have noticed that back in late June, early July, I was missing from a couple of segments. It's because my father fell in his house, cut open the back of his head, went into the hospital for 2 weeks, and ultimately died. Now I'm left with dealing with the estate and trying to get everything organized for my mother and my other siblings. And during that process, I realized that one thing that everybody's going to have to see an attorney about at one point or another is an estate. Unlike the other areas of our practice where we have divorce law, we have criminal law, you know, a lot of citizens may not get an attorney for criminal law because they might only be a traffic ticket. You know, many people like you, Mike, I know you've been happily married for many decades. You may never get a divorce attorney. But this is an area of law that there's a lot of competition out there in the Capital Region, and this is an area of law that the average person is eventually going to need. If they properly plan for their death, as sick as that may sound, if they properly plan for their death, they'll save a ton of money when the tax man comes around. So, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about estate planning?
Well, Matt, you're absolutely correct. Not everyone's going to need a matrimonial attorney or a criminal attorney or a litigation attorney, but the fact of life is that everyone at some point in time, unfortunately, is going to die. So it's really much better in everybody's best interest and your family's best interest to make preparation for that and to make sure that when you die, A, your assets are going to be disposed of as quickly and as efficiently as possible and with the least possible tax implications to the estate. So everyone really should be thinking about meeting with an attorney to at least have a will, at the very, very least have a will. A basic will, because that's going to take care of your loved ones after you're gone, and that's going to be the document that's going to make sure that they get whatever property you want to have them get, and who's going to be handling your estate is the person that you choose. And it really is important to have that taken care of.
And this is one of the most important topics because literally people's estates are on the line. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on people's net worth, is on the line because the tax man could come and take it. So listening to the advice that you have tonight can save people lots of money. So that's why I find this personally interesting. Also, you know, if anybody here becomes an executor, we're going to give tips tonight on what to do as an executor and how to maximize the estate so that the siblings and the decedent's immediate relatives are well taken care of. College Chris.
Why should I hire an attorney to do a will? Can't I just, you know, take out my little notepad and write up my own will where I want all my five things to go that I have accumulated over the years and just sign it? That seems like it should be legit for me.
I think you got to be smart to do a will, Chris.
Oh, thanks, man.
Well, Chris, unfortunately, things aren't that easy or that simple. There's legal requirements for a will. There's legal requirements for how a will is supposed to be executed, what's going to happen when the person signs the will. And the odds of a layperson being able to put everything together are about the same as hitting the Mega Millions drawing, in my opinion.
And you got to think of it like this, right, Mike? Since you have so much money on the line, do you really want to risk it by doing it yourself? That's the reason why lawyers make a lot of money, is because they can invalidate wills, especially if it's not done correctly.
This is very true. You really can't play this game yourself. You really need to have an experienced attorney at your side who's going to be able to help you and let you know what should or shouldn't be in the will, how best to handle things, who would be the appropriate people to be your fiduciaries, and what tax planning should be done that could save. Literally, you know, we're not talking about saving a couple hundred dollars here. We're talking about literally sometimes saving hundreds of thousands of dollars, even millions of dollars, if things are planned properly so that they can be passed along to the next generation as efficiently and as cheaply as possible from a tax point of view.
I know our newspaper celebrity tonight has a question to ask, but I want to throw out there to the listeners, give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY. We have a great trust and estates attorney here tonight that's available to take your calls. If you have questions about dying or what to do with your money when you do die or when a relative dies, star WGY, that's star 949 on your Blackberries, or 1-800-TALK-WGY on your home phones. Let's go, Miss Queen of the Times Union.
Mike, I'm wondering, for those out there who may be thinking about meeting with an attorney to do a will, what types of things should they be doing in preparation? What types of things should they bring to the meeting with you?
Well, if they have any legal documents already in place, I would like them to bring those. If they have a will that another lawyer has prepared or a trust agreement or anything of that nature, that's one thing I want to take a look at. They should also sit down and kind of think through on their own what they, from their point of view, would want to see happen to their property and who they want to be their state representatives. And I may be able to show them how best to accomplish that, maybe in a little bit different format or a little bit different way than they would be able to come up with on their own. And I would also need to have a list of the names, addresses, and telephone numbers of all the people who are going to be mentioned in the will, either as beneficiaries or as fiduciaries, namely, or by that I mean either trustees, executors, or guardians for minor children.
Who should have a will, Mike? You know, 18, when you turn 18, you're allowed to get a will. Is that correct?
Right. You have to be at least 18 years old in New York State to be able to sign a valid will. And maybe not every 18-year-old should have a will, but you should be thinking about it anyway, just to have even a very basic bare-bones will, because everyone owns something, and unless you don't care who gets that something when you die, it's going to go to someone, perhaps not anyone near what your intent would or your desires would be. Plus, you never know what you're going to own when you die. Like, you could have an unexpected inheritance from a great aunt, or you could hit the lottery, or who knows what could happen. But you never know what's going to be there to pass along to your loved ones when you die. So that's why everyone could at least consider having a will, even if they're young and don't consider themselves to have an awful lot of assets.
We'd like to hear what you have to say tonight. Give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY on your cell phones. That's star 949 for the Blackberries. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the $69 will kits that you can get at your stationery store. See you in a couple.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, Portfolio Manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions, online at integralone.net. That's integralone.net, 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and tonight I'm joined by estate planning attorney and my law partner, Mike Tomlin. As always, we have Val and Chris in the studio, and if you want to give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY on your cell phones. If you want to put a face to a voice, visit our firm's website at TullyLegal.com or go today to today's Times Union, page E1. Nice photo of co-host or correspondent Valerie Brizzetti, the firm's administrator, and also SPCA Sergeant Valerie Brizzetti, looking very mean in the photo there with her baton, kind of scares me. You could also check out TullyLegal.com for bios on Mike Tomlin, our estate planning attorney. What do we call you now, Chris, our auditor?
Yes.
Our auditor, Chris. And for more information on estate planning, there's a whole webpage on the TullyLegal.com website on estate planning. You know, Mike, one of the things that I'm in the military, and I actually had a drill this weekend, and I know I spoke to people this weekend about the show, and many of the people under the age of 50 all said, that's crazy. I'm not going to do a will, a power of attorney, a healthcare proxy, because I'm not going to die anytime soon. And honestly, Mike, if it wasn't for me going to Iraq, I probably wouldn't have a will. But because I went to Iraq, the military required me to get a will. Why am I an idiot, Mike?
Why are you an idiot?
You look dumbfounded. Let's focus in on why I'm an idiot for not getting a will.
If we had that on a webcam, we'd
win an award for that look, Mike.
as I discussed earlier in the program, everyone really should have a will. And even if you think you don't need one, that you could be laboring under a very false assumption. A lot of times, young married people don't have an awful lot of money when they start out. What they do have is jointly held or their designated beneficiaries on their company retirement plans or their life insurance policies. But the fact of the matter is, if you have small children, even if the only reason that you would want to have a will would be because of that, under the will, you would be allowed to designate who you want to act as the guardian for the children in the event that both of the parents died together, which unfortunately happens more often than one would think and one would expect.
That's probably the most important point, that now that I have a toddler son, I should and honestly, I went to Iraq in 2005. I don't have an updated will with where my son should go should my wife and I die. And my wife and I have had this conversation, but there's something scary about seeing you, Mike. Just something about estate planning attorneys that scares, you know, people in their 30s like me. How should I overcome that? And I'm a professional, and you're the next office over, but I'm still scared to see you, to talk to you about this stuff.
A lot of people are reluctant to talk about this stuff, and it's very easy to put off. I've seen it happen many times over the years, and it's always going to be next week, or we'll talk about that, and the husband and wife have the conversations. They never go anyplace. Finally, they make the call. They come in. They see you. You draft the documents, and it's still sometimes a push to get them to come in to finalize things and come in and actually sign them up. But everyone should address it. You have to face reality. You never know what's going to happen in this world. You never know how what tragedy might be around the corner. Not to be a gloom and doom prophet, but you just don't know. You come in to see me, Matt. You know, I will treat you with courtesy and respect as I do every other client, and I will make sure that your needs are met in a prompt, efficient, and orderly manner. And you will not be scratching your head 3 months from now saying, "We never heard from Mike Tomany on those documents that he told us he's going to be preparing for us." You have them timely, and assuming you're willing to come back in and sign them up, then you will be taken care of in a prompt and efficient manner.
Hey, Mike, what happens if somebody dies without a will? Is there a process that they go through that the state does?
If you die without a will, your property would pass under the will that the New York State Legislature has written for you. It's Section 4-1.1 of the state's powers and trusts law, and that provides a little chart that tells the person who's going to receive their property when they die if they don't bother to go to the lawyer to get a will. And oftentimes it would be something significantly different than what your wishes would be had you put them into a will.
Val?
Mike, I have a quick question for you about the mental state of clients that you may have, and what kinds of requirements are there for signing a will?
Well, first of all, you have to be at least 18 years old, and you really have to be aware of what's going on at that present moment. You don't have to be Albert Einstein. You don't have to be, you know, the smartest person in the world. All you have to do is realize that what it is that you're signing is your will, and it's not a contract or an order form for the supplement of the Times Union or whatever. You have to know that your property, your assets, that the thing you're signing really is your will. It's going to dispose of your property when you die. And you have to – there's a little ceremony that's involved when the person signs.
Tell us about the ceremony, because I find this interesting. I think it's like a marriage ceremony.
Well, in a way it is. When a person signs a will, what they're theoretically supposed to come up with on their own is they're supposed to tell the witnesses that what they're going to be signing is their last will and testament, that they've read it, that they understand it, that they understand the nature of a will that's going to dispose of their property when they die, that they're aware of their assets, that they're aware of the people who would ordinarily be considered the natural objects of their bounty, their immediate family, and that when they sign the will, they're supposed to tell the witnesses that, yes, indeed, I'm signing it, I've read it, it expresses my will, it's going to dispose of my property how I want to have it disposed of. That's my signature, and when the two of you please witness my will, sign here on this line here and fill in your address there, that's what's supposed to happen when a person signs a will. Would anyone ever elicit all that information on their own and just voluntarily say that? No, of course not. That's why I have to ask the questions that produces those responses, and I do that in every single will that I've presided over the execution of over the last 30-some years. And that way I know that if a will contest ever does arise down the road, I can honestly take the stand in court and testify that the person properly said all these things, that the questions were asked, that the answers were given, and that the person did indeed, in fact, know what he was signing, and that it was his voluntary act indeed in his will.
Here's a question for you, Mike. College Chris has a will, and he's leaving all of his stuff to celebrity newspaper star Valerie Brizzetti. Assuming that he decides to change his mind tomorrow and he doesn't want to leave all of his belongings to his co-worker, co-host, and newspaper celebrity, Valerie, what can he do to get rid of that will?
Well, if he didn't want it to be his will anymore, he could do something as very simple as just tear the thing up, because once you destroy it, that's the end of the will. What he would really want to do if he took the trouble to prepare one to begin with is to go to see the lawyer that prepared the first one to say, wait a minute, all bets off on this. Here's what my current thinking is. Let's redo this.
What if Sergeant Brizzetti from the Schenectady County SPCA has a copy of the will?
Wouldn't make any difference.
Really? She can't go in the court and say, listen, you know, I killed College Chris, but here's a will giving me all the money?
That's not going to work.
All right, let's go to the phones. Andrew from Troy, you're going into the military.
Actually, I'm already in the military. Oh. And I have a question. Both my wife and I are legal residents of Washington State, and we were married in Washington State. However, I'll be in New York for the next 4 years. My question is, if one of us were to die, or both of us were to die, and we had a will that was written by you guys in New York State, who would have jurisdiction over that? Would it be Washington State or New York State?
Well, just to start off with, we wouldn't do your will because you're in the military. You get free legal services. So one of the biggest perks of being in the military is being able to go to the Latham, the National Guard headquarters, and seeing one of the full-time legal assistance officers, or going up to Saratoga and seeing one of the naval JAGs, and they can do your will and do all the executions for you. And there's actually a separate set of rules that apply to active duty military. And Mike, do you want to touch on that?
Right. You have a will that was executed in the state of Washington. And assuming that it was properly executed out there, it would be still valid and recognized in New York State. The will is really probated in the state and in the county where you actually are domiciled, where you reside when you die. So unless you're just temporarily here for a vacation or just a quick little thing where your intent was always to go back to your home in Washington, New York State, if you had severed all your permanent ties with Washington, would no longer be your domicile would be New York State, and that would be where your will would be probated. And the fact that it was signed and prepared in Washington, as long as valid under their rules when it was signed, it would be acceptable in New York.
Okay.
And I just want to point out one thing to you. I would highly recommend that you go visit a legal assistance officer once a year to update your will, because things happen. I know in the last 3 years since I updated my will, I've bought a house, I've had a child, some of my assets have gone up. I probably would want to redirect some of my estate a little bit differently now than I did 3 years ago. And that's one of the perks that you have as a free attorney being in the military. Take advantage of it. It's one of the reasons why you get the pay that you get, because you have all these other benefits.
Okay.
Hey, thanks, Andrew.
All right, thank you.
No problem. Mike, tell us about a codicil.
Codicil is the legal document that you sign when you want to make a change to your will. Normally, it's used for a relatively small change. If you have had a whole series of changes that you wanted to make, then you would probably be better off doing the whole will over. I normally feel that, especially in today's world where everything's on word processing, it's often easier actually to do the will over than it is to do a separate codicil. Plus, there is one possible downside of using the codicil rather than doing the whole will over. If you do a will, which gives someone $10,000 perhaps, and then you do a codicil where you eliminate that provision, when it comes time to probate that will, the person who had the $10,000 bequest under the original will would be a person who would be entitled to object to your will, because he would be under the class of people known as those adversely affected by a codicil. So when your will is brought down to the surrogate's court for probate, that person would either have to voluntarily sign off saying, well, yeah, okay, I realize his will and I realize he changed it. I'm good with the way it is with the codicil. I'm not going to get any money. Or if he didn't want to sign off, he would then have to be served with a citation directing him to appear down in court at such and such a time, at such and such a place, to show the judge why he feels that there's something wrong with the codicil and that the original will should prevail and he should get his $10,000.
You know, one of the things I'd like to point out, Mike, it's one of those beer questions when you're at the bar. A lot of times people talk about, oh, I'm going to rip up a will, or I'm going to hide a will of an ex-spouse so that way I get their money. In fact, in New York, it's a crime if you do that.
You're correct. It is.
Yeah, so you could actually go to jail if you were to rip up your ex-wife's will, so that way you get the money. Or if you do anything like that, to hide a will, to conceal a will, to destroy a will, you could be doing yourself a lot of harm in New York.
You would be in potential a lot of hot water if you did something like that. That's correct.
So, Mike, what types of situations would warrant changing your will?
Well, you do a will, and you can't just file it away and say, well, I got the will thing taken care of. That's it for the rest of my life, because things change in your life. Any significant life change should precipitate you looking at your will to see if it should be changed. Additional children are born. You get married. You get remarried. You acquire a lot more assets where maybe you had a will before that just was the basic type thing where you weren't really concerned with the estate tax part of it, and now you have enough of a net worth where you should be considering doing estate tax planning so you can preserve as much of that as you can for your family.
All right, Mike.
Family.
Thanks a lot. And if you're listening and you want to give us a call, star WGY on your cell phones, 1-800-TALK-WGY. We'll be back after the news and weather, and we're going to talk about probate.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Quimby. Fannie, Freddie, and Sam, Uncle Sam, the federal government taking control of mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
After this exhaustive review, I have determined that the companies cannot continue to operate safely and soundly and fulfill their critical mission to the public without significant actions.
Federal Housing Finance Agency Director Jim Lockhart, Fannie and Freddie together own or guarantee about half of the home loans in the nation. Both presidential candidates, John McCain and Barack Obama, weighing in on the move.
Obama is saying government must take the interests of taxpayers and homeowners first, and McCain also said that he will support this new measure.
Fox's Laura Ingle. Hurricane Ike, now a Category 3 storm, just making landfall with Cuba, expected to hit the United States later this week. Fox News, we report, you decide.
A10 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Well, in the overnight hours, expect clear skies and a low of 57 as you're waking up for your Monday. Partly sunny skies and a few clouds. Pretty good way to start the work week with a high 78. Tuesday, thunderstorms likely. Pack an umbrella, toss it in the back seat of the car, have it handy with a high 75. Wednesday, sunshine 62, and then Thursday looks good as well, sunny 72. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Craig Ross with the 810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517. Or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or, if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number, 518-755-9517. Or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm joined by the attorneys for my law firm, Tully Rinke PLLC, to give you insight on the legal issues that matter most to you. We're broadcasting around the planet on WGY.com. Here tonight is estate planning attorney Mike Tominey. Mike brings to the studio over 37 years of practicing law and assisting people with their sensitive estate planning needs. You can find out more about Mike at our firm's website, www.tullyrinke.com. We also have in the studio College Chris. See what he looks like. Go to the tullyrinkeshow.com. And we have Detective Sergeant Valerie Brizzetti from the Schenectady County SPCA, who, if you want to see what she looks like, go to www.timesunion.com. You see a nice photo of her in front of a police-looking car on the main webpage. She's also on page E1 of today's Times Union. She's also on the TullyLegal.com website. She's also on the FedAttorney.com website. She's also on the TullyRinkeShow.com website. And I'm sure she's on a few more websites that I'm not going to name right now.
She's pretty important.
She is. So, Mike, tell us, what's probate?
Probate is a term that's often misunderstood and often gets a bad rap, in my view.
A lot just of so you know, Mike, I thought that was very funny. Val is turning 10 shades of red right now. So keep on going, Mike.
Probate actually isn't the terrible thing that a lot of people make you believe that it is. Probate really is the process where when a person dies, the person responsible for probating the will, the executor, the person named in the will, takes the will, the death certificate, a probate petition, which gives pertinent information about the decedent and the beneficiaries of the estate and those people who are interested in the estate down to the court. They file it with the court. And hopefully within a week or two later, the judge would review things and issue a decree saying that, yes, this is the person's will. He knew what he was doing when he signed it. And I'm going to appoint John Jones as the executor of the person's estate. They would get a nice little certificate from the court with a little seal on it, which would then give them the authority to go to the banks and stock brokerages and whatever to take the assets that were in the person's name alone when he died and put them into estate name so they can be used to pay the debts.
Mike, that's an important point. Tell me about the executor a little bit, because that's the most common question that I get from lay people is, I was just named the executor of my father's estate, my mother's estate, my brother's estate, my son's estate, whatever the case may be, and they want to know what should they do. What is an executor and what should they do?
The executor is the person who basically is in charge of carrying out the terms of the will and making sure that everything that should be done after a person dies gets done. The executor's job is to probate the will, if in fact the will has to be probated, to then identify all of the person's assets and have them properly valued as of the date of the person's death, to investigate as to what bills may be outstanding and owed by the decedent and to make sure that they get paid in a timely manner, to file whatever tax returns are required for the person, is, unless you die early in the year, there's normally a requirement to file a final personal income tax return on behalf of the person. And when the person dies, that isn't the end of the income tax generated from that person's wealth. The government gets a new taxpayer called the estate of John Jones, basically, and they would also have to file what they call a fiduciary income tax return if, in fact, the estate earned more than $600 in any taxable year. If the estate is large enough, and in New York State, large enough means over $1 million. For federal purposes, it means over $2 million. They would also be responsible for filing federal estate and or New York State estate tax returns with New York State or the federal government.
Mike, it is clear that you have 37 years of knowledge in that head, and you want to help the listeners. And I see we have a couple of calls. If you want to get some knowledge from Mike for free, and that's 37 years of legal knowledge. It's on the air right now for free. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY on your cell phones, or star 949 on your Blackberries. But before we take a call, should I name multiple executors, Mike?
You should not necessarily name multiple ones to act all at once, because that often causes confusion and disagreement among the executors themselves. But you should name backup executors. Where if one can't act for whatever reason or dies before you or just doesn't want to do it, somebody else would be in place that you would have chosen to be next in line, basically. The fact that you're named as an executor in somebody's will doesn't mean you have to do it. You can always renounce that appointment.
So I heard another benefit of being an executor is that you can actually make some money on this. Explain to me how that happens.
Well, as an executor is entitled by statute to receive a commission for the property that he takes in and handles in his capacity as an executor. There are a couple of exceptions to that, but basically, executor is entitled to 5% of the first $100,000 in assets that he receives, 4% of the next $200,000, 3% of the next $300,000, or $700,000 rather, and then down the line to eventually winds up down to 2%. So the executor does receive pay for doing what he's doing to represent the estate to make sure all these things get done. It is taxable income to him, and it is deductible by the estate either on the federal estate tax return or on the income tax returns.
You know, Mike, there's another misconception out there with lay people that probate either takes a couple of days or it takes a couple of years. And generally, that's when people talk to me, they tell me horror stories of how their dad's will or their stepdad's will took 5 years to probate. Or I hear the flip side is, oh, I don't need an attorney. The probate of my dad's will took 3 days. How long does probate take based off of your 37 years of solid trust and estates experience?
Probate in its true term and limited to what it really entails shouldn't take any more than a week or 2 weeks, depending on how busy the court is when you file the papers with the court, to have someone appointed as executor. This is assuming you don't have to publish something in the newspaper if there are unknown or missing heirs, or you have a contest where somebody has to be cited to come down to the court 30 days later to try to tell the judge that the will isn't any good because he doesn't like it, basically. But probate itself, it really is a short-term thing. What people confuse in their own minds are they blend probate in with administration, which involves all the other things the executor is supposed to be doing, namely identifying and valuing the assets, paying the bills, paying the tax returns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, Mike, before we take a phone call, *WGY, *949 on your Blackberries, 1-800-TALK-WGY on your home phones. Let's throw it to our celebrity of the day, Valerie Brazetti, front page E1 of the Times Union. Val, what's your question?
I'm just wondering how often
am
does
I beating
it,
that down? Is it a dead horse? I see you're sending me text saying stop, but it's too much fun. I'm sorry.
It's a good thing the webcam.
I wish I was on the front page of the Times Union ever.
Anyway,
I'm not nearly as important as you. I'm not a law firm administrator, a radio talk show host, or a sergeant of some type of police type agency where you got guns and batons.
Okay, enough. Mike, how often does it happen that people contest a will, like go to court and actually stand up and say, no, that's not valid, that's not what my husband, brother, whatever, wanted?
It happens a fair amount of times, but you know, certainly not the majority of cases. And you can't just contest a will because you don't like what it says. If you don't, not everyone can contest a will. You have to be within a certain designated class of people who would have taken the property had there been no will, or you're adversely affected by the codicil, as we talked about before. But you can't contest a will just because you don't like it, because you weren't getting enough money out of it, or whatever. You'd have to show that, A, the ceremony wasn't properly taken care of, it wasn't properly executed, that the person didn't know what he was signing, that he was didn't have the mental capacity to sign a will at that point in time, that he's unduly influenced by someone under his care who overtook his mind, or that...
What does that mean, overtook his mind?
Basically, browbeat them into saying, well, I've been taking care of you all these years, you know, and they really didn't want to leave everything to him or her, the person who was doing that, but for peace in the family and to continue to get the care they needed to continue living, they would, you know, sometimes reluctantly, we'll sign this or whatever. That's what you want me to do. But that's not really what they want to do, but they don't have the courage to do otherwise.
So tell me a little bit about these estate and gift taxes. I know there's some kind of a way that you can limit the amount of taxes that you're going to have to pay by maybe giving away your money earlier or having a plan of how you're going to give away your estate.
Right. There are two separate taxes that are involved in these things. One is the gift tax. And right now, a person can give up $1 million away during his lifetime and not pay any federal gift tax. Or New York State abolished its gift tax several years ago, so that would be off the table too. But you can right now give away $12,000 a year to as many people as you want without having to either, A, file a gift tax return or pay any gift tax whatsoever on that. So if you want to pick up the phone book and start writing out $12,000 checks to everybody as you came across them, you could do that without any requirement to either file a return or pay any tax.
Do the recipients have to claim that on their taxes?
Nope, income tax free.
And is there any limits to that?
Nope, you can keep on going as long as you have checks, as long as you have names, as long as you have money in the account.
That's pretty good. Hey, it's time for a short break. We'll be back with the Tully Rinke estate planning attorney, Mike Tominey. Give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY, *WGY on your cell phones.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, careersintransition.com.
LLC.com.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, Portfolio Manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions. Online at integral1.net. That's integral1.net. 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property. But First Rate Funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable rate mortgage, First Rate Funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First Rate Funding, New Carter Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
We're back to the Tully Reiki Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and tonight I'm joined by estate planning attorney Mike Tominey from the law firm of Tully Reiki PLLC. As always, I have College Chris sitting here, and I also have newspaper celebrity Valerie Brazetti. Go to www.timesunion.com. Take a look above the Capital Region link there, and you'll see her in her law enforcement outfit with a big black dog. Is that your dog?
It is not.
Oh, whole line of questions we could ask here, but we're going to move along. Also, you can see Valerie on page E1 of today's Times Union. To find out more about the show, go to WGY.com or go to TullyRinkyShow.com. You can Google it, which, by the way, today is the 10th anniversary of Google. It was started up in a garage out in California today. Fastest growing company in the world. Just figured I'd throw that tidbit out there, another bar trivia tool for you. If you can't get through to us tonight, because we do have a lot of phone calls and we are getting swamped and Mike does have a lot of information, don't forget that Mike is available all week long at the Tully Reiki Law Offices at 518-218-7100. You can also send him an email at miket@tullylegal.com. But we will try and get in a couple of calls tonight in between the many questions we have. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or star WGY on your Verizon and Singular cell phones. That's star 949 if you have a BlackBerry like me. Mike, tell us a little bit about power of attorneys, healthcare proxies, and living wills. What are they?
Well, a living will basically is the legal document that a person signs to memorialize what he or she wants to have done or does not want to have done medically in the event they're ever in a situation where it's basically an end-of-life illness or there's little or no medical hope that the person's going to pull out of it. You know, the classic example is someone's going to be on a respirator the rest of their life and live like a vegetable, and is that really, really life? Is that how you want to spend your final years or however long that may take?
You know, that's an interesting question, Mike. I, for example, want to survive at all costs. My wife may want me to die. If I give her a healthcare proxy, is she obligated, if she knows my wishes, to do what I want, or can she whack me?
She is supposed to make the decisions based upon what you had done if you were able to vocalize them on your own. That's one of the
reasons. She can't superimpose her judgment
against
me.
She's not supposed to superimpose her judgment, whether that would really happen in reality or not.
Who would help me? If I'm laid up and I'm comatose and she wants to whack me, everybody knows that I want to live, how would could the doctors keep me going even though she says no if there's a living will? Well, technical question, need to pay you to see you for that one?
No. She's supposed to be doing what you would have said if you were able to communicate the decision yourself. If she didn't, she said, no, I know he wants to stay on that, thinking this in her head, but I don't think that's a good idea. I don't want to spend the rest of my life going to visit him up in the hospital like that.
Mike, for the record and for all of our listeners out there, if anything ever happens to me, keep me going.
I will do whatever I can, Matt.
Well, which takes priority, the living will or the healthcare proxy?
The living will is the guidelines, the ground rules for the healthcare proxy to the person named as healthcare proxy to use. It's a recitation, as I said, of what the person wants to have done and what they don't want to have done medically. The healthcare proxy is the document where you actually pick someone out. You name them as the person who's going to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself.
Mike, we're getting overloaded with phone calls here, so let's go to Kim from Latham. Kim, how are you doing tonight?
Great, thank you.
We apologize for keeping you on hold so long. We've just been swamping Mike with good questions in here. I know I have tons of information that I want to give out. I know Mike does too. But thanks for taking a phone call, calling us on 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY on your cell phones. What's your question tonight?
I have a special needs child, and I was just wondering how I could protect him should anything happen to me.
That's a great question. Thanks, Kim. Mike, what do you do?
Well, you should sit down with an attorney who has done special needs trusts before. You could provide for your child either under your will with a special needs trust or do it inter vivos where you're living. I guess the question would be when you would want to have funds that you presently have used for that child's purpose.
And that's becoming a big issue now. I think in the past 5 years, special needs trust has skyrocketed. Do you see that too, Mike? And if so, why?
Well, I think there's more of a realization of that people with these types of needs need protection over and above and need help over and above what the government assistance programs give them. And basically, you now have a mechanism whereby you could put some money into trust that's not going to disqualify the person from all the governmental benefits, Medicaid or whatever they're getting, and still to be able to allow the child to enjoy things that they wouldn't have been able to enjoy by just mere government, you know, assistance programs, vacations, special, you know, TVs, nice things like that. You know, some of the nicer things that would enhance the quality of their life, which it would not be available had you were relying just on the government assistance type things, or if you had just given the money to them outright, because that would just be used to reimburse Medicaid for the cost that they've already expended on the child's behalf.
And I think that's the key point here is to point out that these special needs trusts are not there to help pay the medical bills. They're for the other things that the government doesn't pay for, vacations, the big screen TV, maybe, you know, the lobster dinner on the birthday.
Right, you're absolutely correct. That's the intent of that, to give them the taste of some of the finer things in life without having the benefits be taken away. If it was by a direct gift to the
because that's child. A whole other aspect of your practice, Mike, is Medicaid planning to ensure that special needs children get the government support that they need,
right?
And the trusts are there to augment it.
Right, it has to be done right, or else if it's not a qualifying special needs trust, the monies that would go into that trust would have to go first back to Medicaid to repay them for what they've spent on the child so far.
Now, Mike, the question that comes up a lot that people ask me, because I'm involved in helping animals, and I know our celebrity guest tonight, Detective Sergeant Valerie Brizzetti from the Schenectady SPCA, is probably going to ask this question. If you could take care of a special needs child, what about an animal? Can you, in your estate planning, put money aside to make sure that your beloved dog or cat is taken care of?
Yes, there is a relatively new section of the law that allows you to establish a fund for an animal's benefit, and that can be done now.
Madam Brizzetti, did that answer your question?
That was not on my mind at all. Actually, I did have a question getting back to the other documents, healthcare proxy. Mike, I wanted to know what type of advice you would have for designating a healthcare proxy. Would you rather have somebody that's very close to you, somebody that's maybe a little more removed that could have a clearer mind, you know, given the circumstances?
I would rather have someone who's very close to me, obviously, because they are going to be the ones that are really going to know what you would want to have done, and someone who really would be acting in your best interests. But you should also name at least one backup, preferably two backups, because a lot of times the person you're going to be naming is going to be your spouse, and a lot of times if you're in a situation where you need to have the proxy used, it could be a result of a car accident where your spouse was also involved, and they wouldn't be able to act, or the spouse may be so distraught at what's going on at the time that they just couldn't think clearly or come to a conclusion, that then you would really need to have somebody available to step in and make the call that should be made.
Mike, before we get another question around the roundtable, I do want to throw it out to our listeners. And I actually want to throw this out to the listeners, is we have a blog on our website that we monitor to make sure nobody says anything inappropriately. But I do know we have a bunch of very loyal listeners that send me a lot of emails that listen every week. And there's one very local, very vocal listener, Paul from Albany, who's a regular caller in. I think he calls in about every other week. And based off of emails that he sent me, I understand he's laid up with a bum knee. How you doing, Paul from Albany?
I'm doing good. How are you guys tonight?
Good. How's your knee?
I'm recovering. I got about 10, 12 more days.
Great. I just want to let you know that we greatly appreciate having listeners like you that are regular listeners every Sunday night that have an interest in the law, have an interest in commenting on our blogs, have an interest in emailing me. I really do appreciate it, and that's why I jumped you over the line to put you on the air, because I know you are one of our frequent callers.
Well, I'd also like to say that I know a lot of people that work at your firm, and I have nothing but the best things to say about it as well. That's why I support your show.
Thanks, Paul. We only try and hire top-quality people. So, Paul.
But my question tonight was kind of more directed maybe towards college, Chris, because I know he's in school, he's younger. Say he had a roommate, they partly owned stuff, and he died. What would happen to the partly owned goods in terms of what would go to the other person or the family or how that works?
Knowing college Chris, I think he'd swipe it in the middle of the night so your family doesn't know that you have a big screen TV in your living room.
I actually made a will so that I give it to my parents and not my roommate. So.
That's why college Chris works for a law firm. Mike, what about the roommate that dies in testity? What if college Chris steals all of Paulie's goods, including his big 42-inch screen flat panel TV?
Well, then College Chris would be talking to one of the other attorneys here in the criminal section to see how best he could proceed.
And that is a serious offense.
It's
a theft.
It certainly is.
College Chris does take his roommates, and I'm assuming he does have a roommate. I don't know that much about College Chris. But assuming he has a roommate and he swipes the stuff after College Chris or after his roommate gets into a car accident, College Chris did a petty larceny or, depending on it, grand larceny.
I would never do that, Matt. You know me.
I know you. Sometimes, you know, people lie. Sometimes people do things that they don't mean to do. You know, in the heat of the moment, somebody got into a car wreck, you're liable to swap an LCD flat panel TV. You know, it's understandable. But actually, I know you, Chris. I know you wouldn't, just like I know Mike wouldn't. Mike, real quick. If you had the option of doing a will, a power of attorney, a healthcare proxy, or a living will, which one would you do?
I'd do all of them. I really would. I think there are four things that everybody should have. It's better to do them all at once, in my opinion, because it's hard to focus on these types of issues to begin with. So when you're there, when you're doing it, I think you should take care of all four, get them taken care of, where you only have to kind of look at them periodically just to make sure they still say what you want them to say, and the people who are appointed are still the people you want to be in charge of different things. And that's a much better and more cost-effective way of doing it, because if you're in to have all four as a package, it'd be cheaper than coming in and having all four done separately.
You know, Mike, I talked earlier about how uncomfortable I am with seeing you. And I also mentioned earlier that my father recently died. He had a will. He was actually the one that instilled in me to get a will. But how do you bring that conversation up with your parents or your wife? How do you recommend that you bring that conversation up? Hey, I'm thinking about dying. Let's go see the attorney so the tax man doesn't get my money. Is that the right way to say it?
Well, I think you have to take a practical approach, a responsible approach to things. I mean, you reach a certain age and you have acquired some assets and you have children that have to be provided for and a family. And you really have to take the responsibility of seeing what's going to happen after you die to make sure that your family is going to be protected.
And the key thing, I guess, is buying the key elements in one's life to get a will, a healthcare proxy, a power of attorney, is I guess, when they get married, when they get divorced, when they buy a house, when they have a child, the key main life-changing events.
Right. They're the ones that certainly should precipitate someone to have a will made if they haven't done it already. And if they have done one already, then they should be looking at it to make sure that this new event is going to impact how things are stated in those documents. And everyone, even if you have one, whether you have big life event change or not, should look at something periodically just to see that things are still good, things are still the way you want them, that still expresses your intent, that the people you name are still the people you want to handle.
Mike, I want to thank you a lot for appearing tonight. I also want to thank College Chris and our celebrity guest host or guest correspondent, Valerie Brizzetti. That's it for this Sunday. If you'd like to give a special thanks to Mike and Val and Chris, and if you want to get a hold of Mike, give him a call at 518-218-7100 or send him an email at mikeT@tullylegal.com. We'll hear you next Sunday at 9 p.m.